Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Saturday. I'd like to welcome everybody here to today's episode of On Point. I'm Don Allen with IBNN News, and joining me today is civil rights legend, fellow blogger, mentor, co-host, the guru, Ronald A. Edwards.
Good afternoon, Don.
I want to plug in there, who is also the host of the Minneapolis Television Network, at Channel 17, Sundays at 5 p.m. in Minneapolis, Black Focus. And you write a weekly column in Minnesota's oldest and most respected black newspaper, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. I would also like to send our sincere respect, admiration, and thanks to the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder for running a great public service announcement on the last page of the paper for this show. I'm glad that we have that support of Minneapolis's number one black news outlet and oldest black business in Minnesota. And what do you think about that, Mr. Edwards?
Oh, I'm very appreciative and actually honored with respect to the kind of coverage that they gave us. It's something that you just can't even put a price on. So I'm very appreciative of the paper founded by the legendary Cecil Newman.
Yes. And also, I'd like to let our listeners know, get your pencils ready, because I'm going to give you a toll-free number. You can call us anywhere on earth, 1-877-572-4288. Again, that call-in number, we'll probably take calls about 20 minutes into the hour here, is 1-877-572-4288. Well, Mr. Edwards, there's a lot of things going on here in the world, in the nation, and locally here in the Twin Cities, but there's one thing that always seems to keep jumping back on us is I want to go into the oil spill, oil leak, or whatever they're calling it this week, and maybe get into that a little bit. What are your views on that so far?
There's some criticism now by conservatives and liberals that the president used some rather colorful language back on Wednesday when he used the phrase "kick ass."
I don't
see how that is "quote unquote" a negative in the sense of derogatory or et cetera. It's obvious time to kick some behind. I had a chance to, over the last two evenings in preparation for today's show, I've been watching BBC and even the what is called the Prime Minister's Hour on BBC, which is a part of a parliament where the Prime Minister is questioned by both sides of the aisle. One of the things that's emerged, and then I saw a piece last night on CNN, I've been fascinated at the pressure that the Brits are talking in terms of attempting to put on our president about kind of backing up as it pertains to criticism of BP. And the reason is that BP is a significant contributor into the British pension funds. And, pensions are really big in Great Britain as a part of the social political fiber, if you will. And so apparently sometime today, if not already at this hour, the new Prime Minister of Great Britain has had a private telephone conversation with President Barack Obama to talk in terms of this anti-British, anti-BP flavor that's coming out of Washington and specifically other places in the United States and more specifically the Congress. And so I'm kind of taken back by that because, by the way, as we speak at this particular hour, we're now 2 months into this leak, if you will, that is clearly a ecological and environmental disaster that someone is going to have to be accounted for. Now, the question that's come up is that does BP have deep enough pockets to pay off what it will be required to pay off, which will be clearly in the billions. I heard a conservative figure last night on BBC that BP has probably about $65 billion in cash reserves. Those are a combination of euro and American dollars and English pounds and whatever else. But the concern is, Don, is that in the last 10, 11, 12 days, BP has lost 40% of its wealth. 40%.
Well, that's a hit today.
Yeah, that's quite a hit. And so what's happened is that the shareholders, the people who look for the dividend payments and et cetera, are beginning to become anxious. And of course, this issue of that BP put so much money into the quote unquote British pension funds has got people real nervous.
Yeah, on that note, on the oil spill or oil leak has, it changes from week to week, and depending on what mainstream media news outlet you watch or newspaper you read, either online or in print, there seems to be that seems to be the biggest piece of news that's happening. My question then goes to what about the troops that are dying weekly and daily in Afghanistan and Iraq? That seems to be put on the back burner, and it just doesn't seem like news anymore. And with the BP thing going on, with the oil leak, oil spill again, it feels that we're kind of being misled by the mainstream media, of as we always have been, on things that are really important, not to downplay the oil spill at all, but to also, look at the global issues that are still currently happening and that were happening before the oil leak.
Absolutely on point. In fact, again, watching both CNN last night and BBC, that's the British Broadcasting Corporation, I find it interesting that they were talking about the current poll that has been taken. 73% of Americans are talking about the oil spill. A commentator pointed out that only 3% of Americans now are talking about health care. And you remember what a devastating and almost divisive argument and discussion of healthcare was just a couple months ago?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, only about 3% of Americans are even talking about or even interested in it. And yeah. And that's rather interesting. In fact, it turned out to be a disappearing issue during the course of the primaries in a couple of key states this past Tuesday. And by the way, just for our Republican friends out there, the Tea Party seems to be creating some significant damage in these Republican primaries and to Republican standard bearers, if you will. It's going to be interesting to see what the hierarchy or the high command of the Republican strategic planning group is going to do with what the Tea Party is doing to the Republican Party, particularly in so-called red states, which are the so-called conservative states when you talk about the color code. But you're on point, because based on what's happened, first of all, we're having significant increases in casualties now. Right now, and if I'm not mistaken, this is the 12th day, we have suffered 23 American casualties, NATO casualties, in Afghanistan, okay? And there's been some increase in some areas in Iraq. And I'm like you, I've found it amazing how these casualties, the escalations, have been kind of dismissed and pushed to the side. And there's a whole lot of other international news that no one has been talking about. The South Korean-North Korean conflict continues to come into play. There are problems now in one of the former Soviet republics where ethnic fighting is going on. Took 25 or 30 or 40 lives yesterday and over 200 casualties. And you have these conflicts going on, and I just don't think that it's good for what is called healthy news gathering.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of politics, we have to give another black man an applause. I'm going to take you now to Manning, South Carolina. There's a gentleman there. His name is Alvin M. Green. Okay. He never gave a speech during his campaign, become the state's Democratic nominee for Senate. He didn't start a website. He didn't hire any consultants. He did not plant one lawn sign. Now, there's only $114 in his bank account, and the only check he ever wrote was to cover his filing fee, okay?
Okay.
And so he had a three-hour interview. It was a great conversation. He's an unemployed military veteran who could not name a single specific thing he's done to campaign. But more than 100,000 South Carolinas voted for him on Tuesday.
How many again, Don? Was that number?
100,000. Okay. handing him a resounding victory over Vic Raul, who was a former judge and served four terms in the Senate legislature. So,
wow.
That? Now, this is part of, he's a Democrat, but this is the change, okay? The Tea Party, you brought some Republicans over there, some conservatives, and you brought some of that same antiquated old racist kind of mentality to the Tea Party, when I know some Tea Party groups that are far away from that. But on the overall, if you bring those GOP views over, you bring that garbage that comes with them, okay? But this in South Carolina is just another example of people getting tired of the same old, same old. It's wonderful you can go out and spend $300,000 on your campaign, get elected. But, you know, this guy paid his filing fee and he has $114 in the bank. He doesn't even have to file paperwork each month to tell him how much money he's raised, you know, and he's in
there.
Wow.
And he got and he got more votes than he paid based on a dollar per vote. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, his cost per vote was well under what, 3 cents or not even?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And this is South Carolina, and Mr. Green running for the state senate. You say?
Yes. Democratic Senate. Yeah. So he
all
did
right.
Really well, and I was just shocked to see that, because that's kind of what I think we need to get back to, because he did not even go out, like I said, he didn't even go out in his interview, he didn't go campaign. And this was a story, by the way, I want to give the Washington Post credit for posting this story, because this is an important piece of, you know, American voters, citizens getting tired of the same old, same old. And as I look at my screen here, I'm actually on my Gmail account. And
yeah, I see that. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I see here that you have Matt Intenza for governor. That's mm-hmm. for the governor of Minnesota. He has an ad, a sponsored link, and the Democratic Party, and Michelle Bachmann is sitting there, and all these people. It's really funny for, you know, my corporate interest is working for an internet marketing firm, and mm-hmm. I see these people. I've never heard of anybody voting for anyone or a candidate, seeing them in the sidebar on Gmail. And so there's something to be said for having money to blow. And we'd like to congratulate Mr. Green in Manning, Carolina there, South Carolina.
Manning, South Carolina. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
He did right. Very well. Very well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Let's get back on point here. The Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Can we go to Minneapolis now?
Certainly. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, right. Boy, some significant changes once again. Corbell, the new director, been on the job 4 days at the time that the executive committee of the Minneapolis City Council, which is chaired by the mayor and four council members serve on that executive committee, got some rather interesting approval. If I'm not mistaken, I do believe you and I were the only two outsiders slash citizens who were there. The room was loaded with the head of the human resources, the deputy director of human resources, the city's coordinator, the head of the finance department, et cetera. But I was kind of fascinated by the reward system that apparently exists in the city, where we reward people for failure, because she was able to receive a procedural change and was able to appoint three individuals who were previously like managers to become assistant directors. Only problem was, what was peculiar to me, Don, was that they were dropped in grade, but their salaries basically stayed the same or, in fact, were not increased. By the way, these three individuals or these three positions will be making in the middle 80,000s, if you will.
Yes,
all three
yes.
positions, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, I had sent her an email because we were concerned in doing our journalistic investigative reporting about the Twin Stadium and the baseball or the ballpark authority and Target Field about the ballpark minority ethnic participation numbers. And we also cited Minnesota Statute 473.114, and I was kind of shocked to get back from her to say that the email she sent back to me was the employment goals, right, 25% for minority workers and 5% for women trade workers. And passing by that spot on a regular basis every day, probably during the last couple of years when they were building the ballpark, I didn't see that reflected at all.
I didn't either, Don, and for a couple of years, not only did I appear before the ballpark authority, which was designated by legislative initiative to be the overseer of the construction of the Twins Stadium, not to be confused with the construction of the Gophers TCF Stadium, which also hired no African-Americans. I was always amazed. I used to, as I've said before, I used to stand up on the bridge with binoculars and look down on the site. And this started with when they started the demolition, first of all. You know, they had to do demolition down there and get the land cleaned up and everything. I never saw these numbers of African-Americans that I'm now being told, and I'm seeing articles that indicate that these individuals were on the site. And this comes at a troubling time, too. It comes at a time when a think tank in Washington, D.C., has come out with a very, very revealing and sad examination of job disparity here in Minneapolis, where African-Americans are three times more likely not to be hired and be out of work than their white counterparts. It was in fact, it was on the business page. of the Thursday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, for those that may want to make reference. And it just points out, and there were some questions, and I noticed here in Minneapolis last night, Channel 11, on its 10 o'clock news, attempted to rationalize and make excuses on why there was such disparity. I mean, three times the number of African Americans are unemployed as opposed to their white counterparts. And one of the things that I thought about upon reflection was that if some black folk could have been hired in the numbers that we're now being told they allegedly were hired on the two major stadiums, and by the way, documentation indicates that on both stadiums in excess of 1,000 workers were allegedly hired at both facilities, so that's 2,000 workers for two sites that were going on at a corresponding time. I just thought that maybe we could have reduced, you know, that disparity by at least a point, point and a half, taking it down maybe from 20.8 to maybe 17. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yes.
Because all I'm hearing now from so-called leaders, the religious conclave and others, in fact, I heard one minister at a school board meeting say that Mortensen, 45% of the workforce on the baseball stadium was African Americans. It may have been 0.45%.
Exactly. And I would like to let the listeners know, Mr. Edwards is talking about an article that came out June 9, 2010 at 9:17 p.m. in the Star Tribune newspaper, that's startribune.com. Twin Cities has the widest jobless gap by race.
Mm-hmm.
There's two excerpts that I think are really important in that article that I would like to share with you and our listeners, because this is the state of Minnesota, and we're going to get into what, you know, some systemic values and reasons of why this is happening. But it starts out by saying that blacks are more than three times as likely to be unemployed as whites in the Twin Cities, giving the area the worst racial disparity in unemployment among the country's largest cities, according to a new study released this week.
Correct.
Okay, correct. Mm-hmm. Now, paragraph number three, even if blacks had the same exact educational profile as whites in Minneapolis, they would still have a much higher unemployment rate, said the study from the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., the think tank that focuses on conditions for working-class Americans. And so I don't know what the motivation for this Molly Young and the Star Tribune to publish this, but I think this is something that we've been hollering through our print and broadcast medium here for the last one. Well, you've probably been doing it for 30, 40 years, and I believe the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So I don't understand, you know, why come to the table now? It seems like every time this
let me just cut in, Don, and indicate here in studio, some of this is now being generated. First of all, the study by the Research Institute of Washington, D.C. had not been anticipated. That's number one. And so when it was introduced, if you will, or published, of course, it went on the wire services, on the blogs, and et cetera. And so Minneapolis city government and the state of Minnesota, because also in that article that you're talking about, an individual identified as a specialist with the Minnesota Department of Economic Development made a rather interesting statement when he said, well, I was surprised, but I wasn't surprised. I mean, you know, the colored community has to kind of expect this happens. I mean, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but that's really what he was saying. But the genesis for this is the level of violence and the fact that some of the bloggers, such as ourselves, have been raising some real serious questions about there is no sincere commitment to economic uplift in the African-American communities and others of color, but particularly the African-American community, which is being so severely impacted. And so one of the arguments that always been made is that some of us who are activists had been complaining and running our mouths, and in fact, things were real good for us. As I said, when I heard black ministers stand up at school board meeting, and they've been meeting with the ballpark authority, Whit Mortensen, et cetera, and have been getting a payout to come out and say how good things are, and then an article like this comes out, you have a hard time justifying your position, if you understand what I'm saying. And so I think the Star decided that they had no choice but to give this at least a general feature, if you will, making it kind of a feature article, though they hit it on the business page, when in fact, really, this article should have been on the Metro, if not on the front page.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Speaking of self-appointed spokespersons, as I call them now, I used to call them leaders, but I figured out that these people aren't leaders that are at the table receiving these grants and loans or, you know, these entitlements, and forget about, as Dr. Martin Luther King said, the least of these. There's a lot going on here in Minneapolis, especially North Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, and late last night in South Minneapolis. And I'd like to get into maybe a little bit of the recent violence, the attempt to address it, and who's at the table. Now, before we do that, I'd like the listeners, if you're on your computer, I'd just like you to Google the definition of poverty pimp. Just check that out, and I'm not going to get into it. That's just something for you to hold on for a little bit later. But today, Mr. Edwards, actually, let me go back to Thursday. On Thursday, I found out that there were a couple of marches and protests in North Minneapolis to stop the violence. Let's stop the violence.
Correct.
And a week before that, I think it was the first Thursday, I went to the General Mills Hawthorne Huddle, and they were in full promotional swing because General Mills Foundation, Mad Dads, a couple other organizations in North Minneapolis are getting together and have a big resource fair and to quote unquote show all the resources we had in North Minneapolis,
okay.
And to stop the violence. So I was not going to go to that one today, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I decided to hop in the car and drive over there in the rain, cold, and no umbrella, and bring my camera.
Yeah, the temperatures, by the way, here in the Twin Cities are in the 50s today. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so, I'm walking around. I see the Minneapolis Police, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department, North Point, Summit Academy, OIC at a table, and when it started raining, it turned into a ghost land. But I asked 8 or 9, 10 organizations that were out there, are there jobs here? Is there some way that, you know, what are they doing to attract the youth? And the story that I wrote that preceded this event on the Independent Business News Network was that, you know, General Mills Foundation of the City of Minneapolis is providing a sideshow circus, and North Minneapolis is being put on display again because you give them some money, they'll put on a show.
Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah, you ask them to address an issue, they'll put on a show. Mm-hmm. You take the money away, they cry racism. And it just doesn't make no sense. And I didn't understand. And still right now I'm kind of disturbed about the whole event because even if they spent between – say $5,000 to $15,000 to do that. The people that they need to talk to, well, let me back up again. The people who are doing the violence are these young kids between 15 and 22 years old. They're either getting killed or killing someone. Okay.
Correct.
They are not at that event. They are so far away from that event that you can't find them with a Star Trek tracking device. Okay, mm-hmm. They're not around.
Okay.
They're not involved in the community. The community does not, those events do not reach these people. They do not get down on the grassroots and go to back there to the Hawthorne neighborhood or to the near north and all, you know, where they're actually gathering on quarters, doing their drugs, doing their thing, you know. And there's nothing to attract those children making $1,000 a day selling marijuana, selling crack, selling heroin, to give that up and come take a job for minimum wage.
Absolutely.
And they don't have any idea of what's happening to even address that issue. So, again, I walked around, and while I was going there, I said, it's just a sign of the times that we live in. A girl came up and said someone had stole her purse. And, and so they got on the microphone and said, hey, you know, this girl, her purse is missing. Will someone bring it back? And now this brother, he was walking out of the parking lot, and he had two bags. I watched. They were giving away these little blue tote bags, you know, for people to carry
right.
all their propaganda
right.
in. And
right.
so, and this brother, you know, I can't look at someone like that and think he's a thief or a crook, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He got to do something to me and try to get away with it.
Right.
But this brother is walking out, you know, minding his own business, and they say, hey, brother, stop. And they go over and they check his bags.
Okay.
So, just embarrassed the guy in front of everybody there because all eyes is on him.
Okay.
This is why people, number one, this is one of the many reasons why people aren't going to participate with you guys, because everyone is suspect. Okay?
Yes, who's black. Yeah, right.
If you're black, you're suspect. And so it was really ridiculous. And, I mean, I understand General Mills Foundation's rationale for, you know, even spending a dollar, because they could have took the money today in the rain and hired 5 to 10 at-risk youths, pay them a nice little salary, purchase some lawnmowers, and had them mowing elderly lawns all summer long in North Minneapolis. There's nothing like that right now.
Nothing at all. You're absolutely correct. And also, again, for our national, international audience, understand that the violence is out of control, dangerously out of control. And, in fact, I would know that locally, probably most of our listeners don't know, there was another homicide early this morning.
Yes.
Along Lindale, in the cafe, a popular spot known as the Red Dragon. Two were shot, one was DOA on scene, and then there was a near fatal stabbing across from the Fine Line in downtown last night, where for the fourth weekend in a row, we had combatants fighting all up and down Hennepin Avenue and First Ave. This has become almost a rite of passage since early April. And not only fighting, but shootings, knifings, and et cetera. And so we've had our second homicide in about 28 hours. By the way, again, no suspects. And one of the things that I would point out that happens in this town, the last 8 African-Americans, male and female, who have been victims of the violence and have been victims of homicide, there are no suspects in custody. Keep that in mind. The last 8 African-Americans to be killed in this city who are homicide victims, there are no individuals in custody.
And another point on that is that we're going to have to give law enforcement, these politicians, a heads up and a clue, because they don't have one right now. And the first thing that I think, Mr. Edwards, they run to and they distribute in the mainstream media, white press, is that this is gang violence. Gang violence.
Yeah.
Okay, these are gangs warring with each other. When, in fact, that is far from the case. I'd like to invite the listeners to also go to YouTube and go to the YouTube channel IBNNORG and look at the first video that pops up. The murder before last. Now we have
Matthew Johnson.
Matthew Johnson in the corner of 12th and not 12th, but Plymouth there and Thomas Avenue, the 1200 block there.
Yeah, 1241. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the apartment building. I went over there the other night, and you know, you had Channel 9, the Star Tribune reporter, there and a couple other folks. And we always, you know, we always like to thank the Minneapolis Mirror, too, for showing up and covering things, because they do it kind of like we do it. They keep it real. So I decided that I would go amongst a crowd of my people and with the camera and credentials and just ask around. And I ended up running into the girl's aunt, I mean the victim's aunt, who was semi-intoxicated and granted me an interview on camera. Well, she did most of the talking, as I let you listen to the other day. And we invite our listening audience to check that out after the show or even during the show, because it's just a state of mind in North Minneapolis of what's going on. Now, off camera, she provided me some very interesting insight into what was going on. And then, Mr. Edwards, I didn't tell you this, but I'm just looking at it right now. I received a message on my YouTube channel under the Ashley Neely funeral clip that kind of it solidifies everything that we've been saying all along and why this is going on in North Minneapolis and why this is not a gang war. Uh-huh. So I go back and I talk to this young lady after she did the interview. I turned off, you know, the camera and put it down so she wouldn't think I was secretly recording. She said, I said, well, what really happened here? And she told me that the victim, his girlfriend, 18 years old, caught him kind of talking, having conversations and et cetera with another woman. And the victim's girlfriend went back and told another girlfriend, who had her boyfriend is involved with some young fellows hanging out over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back and caught the dude and shot him over a relationship. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, since that has happened, I received a message from an anonymous, well, this person has a YouTube account, because the only way you can leave me a message on YouTube is, or try to friend me, is you have to have a YouTube account.
Okay.
And the message reads, "We finally got him. The guy who killed you, baby, Ashley."
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm saying, whoa, okay. So these people are tracking. They're using the internet and messaging. And if this is the case, then the person that was murdered on the other night on Thomas in Plymouth there could have possibly been involved with the Ashley Neely case.
Yeah.
So, And this goes back to the relationships. These are young kids in relationships that aren't mature, and they're hopeless. That there's no future for them. They don't value the life of their friends, their families. I can't say coworkers, because there's no economic opportunity in North Minneapolis. So,
right.
So it's very interesting to see that and just kind of point that out. And some people, they have to refocus their efforts, because this is definitely not a gang war. So.
No, it's a part of a series of conditions which no one really wants to address. But I go back, as we've been talking about earlier, the article from the Economic Research Institute in Washington, nobody has even attempted to approach or question how it is that we have such severe disparity in employment between blacks and whites in this city. Now, you can understand Detroit, maybe even Memphis, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Maybe even Las Vegas, which has had a terrible downturn as it pertains to the tourist industry there and the gambling industry. But Minneapolis, I mean, we're supposed to be an enlightened enclave, if you will, with a lot of economic opportunities, irrespective of the economic collapse of late 2008. But it's something that I heard as a very, very young man many, many years ago, is that there was really very little opportunity for the African American in this town as it pertained to meaningful employment. But go ahead.
We're going to give the listeners the opportunity to call in now. You could either call at 1-347-426-3904. Again, that number is 1-347-426-3904. Or if you're calling outside of the Twin Cities metro area, we have a toll-free number, which is 1-877-572-4288. So at any time, you know, we'll be watching the switchboard closely here. Just give us a call. Other than that, we can go back into what's happening tomorrow here in the Twin Cities. We have, and this is, Mr. Edwards, we have to kind of get into this, because I talked to some point people, and what I'm talking about, listeners, is that there's another rally in March tomorrow in the parking lot of where they're going to build the new Minneapolis Public Schools headquarters. It's spearheaded by the Shiloh International Ministries, the Peace Foundation, KMOJ, and Mad Dads.
And the empowerment, achievement empowerment zone, or the achievement zone. Yeah, right.
Mm. NAS, the Northside Achievement Zone, NAS.
Right.
And, yeah, and so I'm looking at this, and I'm going, okay, this is really weird. This is strange. One of the young ladies that are working with Mad Dad came up to me today at their festival and says, oh, this is the guy that does the negative news.
Okay.
I said, oh, is that right? I said, no, this is news that needs to be out there because no one else is doing it. I mean, the news you guys get on the north side is a week or 2 weeks old. And you're reading that stuff and you're thinking that this is happening, you know, right now. This stuff is old. The money's gone. They got it. And, you know, give up right now. So mm-hmm. I had a talking with her and then kind of got her right on track in kind of a come to Jesus conversation. But anyway, tomorrow, Sunday at 2:30 in North Minneapolis, they're having what's called Angry, which is a ice cream social and a march.
Right.
And yeah, they're going to have that over there on the corners there, right? I think it's Emerson and Broadway, if I'm not mistaken. And and one of the things that I asked Bishop Howell, who is the pastor of Shiloh International Ministries, I called him up and did a phone interview with him and asked him, I says, why aren't you guys down at City Hall protesting? Why would you have a protest and march and even an ice cream social? You guys aren't English elitists, okay? This is North Minneapolis. Let's keep it real here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why would you have a ice cream social march and rally here? Yeah, there's a problem here, but why don't you carry this to City Hall where a lot of the problems can get solved if you put some pressure on them? And he said, well, the murders and crime are happening here in North Minneapolis. We have to pull the community together, organize, and then go to City Hall with a plan. But now, then again, he says, I dislike greedy people. In a response to a question about funding going to other organizations in North Minneapolis with no successful outcomes. And I think that we can speak freely about some of these organizations because it's all public record now. If I didn't put it out, you might have put it out, or Mr. Hodges from the NAACP might have put it out because what's going on? You have millions of dollars that have come through North Minneapolis to agencies like the Stair Step Foundation, who ran Cieza, who had a Tires Plus store, who had a Dairy Queen, who had a Burger King, and didn't really hire anybody from the community. I'm not mad at my Hispanic brothers at all because they stepped up to the plate, came up there, and got jobs. But this was mainly an economic development for some people in a nonprofit to get some money in their pockets.
Right.
This was not adequately tied together to build capacity for residents of North Minneapolis. Then you have the empowerment zone money. You know, we have, you know, in excess of, I would say right now, $30, $40 million kind of floating out there in some invisible zone where Mike Christensen walked up to me because, you know, I've been on this campaign with KMLJ saying, you know, why don't you own your building?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got over $500,000, you know, in the course of, 2006 to now, to get into this building over here, and you're renting, you're a tenant, you know. You
right.
can get a lawful detainer, and Mike Christensen from CPED, City of Minneapolis, said, well, this is the deal they wanted, Don.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know what? I'm not going to argue with that because there's no intellectual giants up there. And so if that's the deal they wanted, you know, God bless them. But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they're not pulling anybody to the table. But getting back to this this jobless gap, and also this event, this Angry event. I'm looking at the flyer right now. It says Angry, active neighborhood gainfully reconciling youth. Now I also asked Bishop Howell. I said, well, where are the gangs located? Have you identified some of the gangs? Have you talked to any of the gang members? Being raised in a spiritual family, there's only so many punches you can pull. And so I kind of stepped back and listened to him. He says, well, a lot of the gang members have came up here and given their life to Christ. Now, I had to go in a little bit deeper, you know, like they call it going for the jugular a little bit. I asked him, I says, well, you know, in January 2010, you received $267,000 grant from Hennepin County for gang intervention programming. And, you know, you have the Avenues program and a couple other programs. I mean, what's happening with that dollar amount? I mean, who is on the streets? And he says, well, he doesn't talk to the gang members, but he has people out. And he was quick to tell me, too, that, well, we didn't get that whole amount. And I explained to him that I know how grants work. It's based on, you know, they'll put the money away on side, like any smart business would do. And you will bill them each month based on the people that you serve. So if you get somebody in treatment, if you counsel somebody, you have them to sign off and talk to them, but you have to carry them to the next level. So if you're out and you're doing this gang intervention or this Avenues program and you meet an individual who happens to be homeless, the rule of thumb is that you take that person and you eliminate one of their problems immediately. Their most serious problem would be the homelessness. Okay. You make sure, make sure that person has adequate housing from the point of your engagement to his next level. So at that first level of homelessness, you know, you could also have drug addiction, you know, the chemical dependency issue. So you have to route that and follow that process all the way from the getting a place to live, maybe being put in treatment, maybe going to a halfway house, maybe getting a GED, getting some education, or going into the workforce. The problem that we have, or the challenge, I should say, that we have in North Minneapolis is that it stops somewhere after initial engagement. Okay? Everything, it being the process or pipeline to success. There is not any goals set up, in my point of view, from just looking and seeing what's going on in North Minneapolis where anyone could be successful. I mean, it's really hard for minority ethnic people in North Minneapolis to open a corner store.
Correct. That's true. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, what do you do with that? And then this event, I'm definitely going out to this event tomorrow because, I mean, I think it's time to kind of speak up and call the poverty pimps out. And they should be out there in full force. The people that are running for office, these nonprofits, because they're on the wrong page as far as I'm concerned. And a lot of my business associates that I talk to, they don't understand it. I have a few white friends who call me up on a regular basis and ask me, Don, what the heck is going on? You know, we don't understand this at all. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to explain it. I mean, they don't see why if someone gets $250,000 in a grant, why they couldn't continue to keep giving that money by having successful outcomes, measurable outcomes. You know, it's not a bad thing to get that kind of money, but it's a bad thing when there's no measurable results from it. Okay, when all you're doing is paying your heat and light bill, basically. So that's what's going on tomorrow on Emerson there in Broadway, the Angry with Shiloh, Mad Dads again,
I understand they're going to have some speakers. Are the names of the speakers there on the list, by the way, or that pamphlet?
What's that now? Yeah, they're going to have, let me see, let me just go back to that real quick. Angry, the speakers are going to be, yeah, he did say he's going to have some speakers, but I don't know if they got them on this pamphlet. Or if you could just get in line and come up there and talk, which they better hope that's not the case.
So, now, let me just ask this question, though, and hopefully we'll get a couple of callers that will, have some observations because this is about community. At the end of the day, and in this case, the end of the weekend after we've marched and et cetera, what will have changed? Does anyone know?
Yeah. I asked a couple people, I said, after today, because, you know, Mayor Archie Rybak was out there
this morning
in the rain, and, you know, he did the political show me thing, and like he was present and doing something, and I asked him, I said, hey, can I get an interview with you? Because that's one of the questions I want to pose to him. I said, what happens? Are there jobs after this? Is something, some economic creature going to crawl out of the ground and spread wealth across the north side? And I want to get this straight, too, from some of my associates and white friends that are tuning in that I see them on the back end here.
Mm-hmm.
These are not people looking for handouts. These are not people looking to be on welfare for the rest of their life. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are people that want access to some kind of employment, a living wage that benefits people in Eden Prairie, Edina, Minnetonka, Bloomington, St. Paul, we need that same thing here in North Minneapolis. They're not asking to get in line just to get a check every 2 weeks. They actually want to work. They want to get out of bed in the morning, go to work. They want to be able to feed their kids. Actually, one of my associates on here that was saying, it's the parents and about the educational piece that people weren't graduating and things like that. I said, no. I said, if them parents don't have any food, they got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and take 3 buses to Maple Grove to work at a $6.16 an hour job.
Mm-hmm.
It's us. It's here. It's here in town. So,
by the way, on a particular point, I'm still asking the question, and we'll continue to ask it here on Point Blog Radio. What happened to the follow up of the great meeting that we were all told, you know, that took place at General Mills, the Northwest Area Foundation, which later passed everything off to the Headwaters Foundation? Why was there ever a follow up? Conference. There was supposed to be a follow-up conference in April to critique what kinds of positive steps had been taken based on the discussions and the recommendations that were made back out at General Mills on that particular fall day. That conference never took place. Are these events that are taking place today and tomorrow, are these supposed to be seen as like substitutes?
You know, I don't understand really what the deal is with that Northwest Area Foundation, Headwaters, and those clowns, because, and I call them clowns kind of semi-respectively, because they have not followed up. They have not done another call to whatever you want to call it there.
Call to armor.
And they're just kind of sitting in a void. And not really applying themselves. And it's really frustrating because you try to make sure that people get this information and they don't send the information out to everybody. And they got a tight little clique. So I have no idea at this point.
Okay. I see we have about 13 minutes left, Don, for this evening's program.
Yes.
And we have
a caller.
Go ahead. Get the callers in. Go ahead.
Okay. You're live on air with Ron Evers and Don Allen on Point. Go ahead. Hello. Okay, they're gone. Let's try this one here. You're live on air. Go ahead.
Hey, Don, it's Tony. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. We have Tony Backdahl on here, Mr. Edwards, on Point. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Say, well, I'm really glad you have this show. It's been a great show so far. I can't wait to listen to your older shows. And, you know, I just want to tell you, you know, I've been working on some of the councils and boards and been watching this grant money be misappropriated for years. And I think that it's not just the African-American community that does it. It just seems like it's like the McKnight Foundation. They pump out trainings every 6 months or so. And there's all kinds of trainings on how to get, you know, how to start an organization, how to be sustainable. And as soon as you get anything that's good, then the state or the county comes in and tries to take it over because, whoa, they get nervous. So I'm glad that you're doing the shows about this stuff. But I actually worked with VJ for a little while, and I offered to do eBay classes where, you know, to teach, because what I wanted to do was show the young folks, because my whole thing is youth in transition. I wanted to show the young folks how to build computers and then how to sell them on eBay, or how to find stuff in your local community that's gently used and sell it on eBay. And that was, to me, self-sustainable. You didn't need to go through any, you know, go through any system that treats you like crap, and it, you know, it would be a great, I thought, you know, and I would do this for free, but they wouldn't even have, they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So that was,
excuse me, they being Mad Dad's?
Urban Ventures. No.
Oh, well,
I had
that's
to,
same thing. Yeah. Mad Dad's Urban Ventures. Yeah. Okay.
Right. I had to, because VJ was up for it, but I had to take it up with Art, and they didn't want, you know, that's not what they're about. They're really about more, I see that as the Urban Ventures across the nation as a national problem for the Francis Fox Piven strategy. I mean, I don't really see them every single time. It's empty. It's like the acorn thing. You know, it's like you go, it's empty. We're, you know, here's the church, here's the steeple. You open the door, and there's really no people. But we've given them thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars of grant money for what?
Okay, good question. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and Tony also brings up a good point because, Mr. Edwards, I'm sitting here, we're sitting here actually with an application to do some internet training in North Minneapolis at the ULAC Center.
Right.
To have a free informational session for small business owners, for Northside residents, anybody that wants to spread a message to get word out on how to use internet marketing tools. The piece that Tony is talking about is very sustainable. One of the things on the internet, real quickly here, is that money can be made on the internet legitimately through eBay, through Craigslist, and things like that. The problem is there's no one training people. People aren't just going to sit down and read the instructions. They want someone experienced that's done it and has experience, you know, doing that. I mean, there's millions of dollars being made on them sites by individuals, by companies, by people that have learned the trades on that.
Sure.
So we want to take that training over because, you know, the University of Minnesota ULOC has received dollars to close the digital divide, if you will. And so in saying that is, who are the people? I mean, they got experts at the U. If you want to talk about a computer, they can tell you how to build it. If you want to talk about computers in the community, we have to stop. We have a problem there, okay? And they need someone that can relate to people in the community and actually do that and be successful in that.
So Tony brings up a good point. Thanks for the call, Tony.
Yeah, right. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And we have another caller here.
Go ahead. Get them in.
Yes, caller. You're on the air. Hello. Okay, they hung up. Yeah, again, you can call in at 1-877-572-4288, or if you're here in the Twin Cities, you can dial the 1-347-426-3904. And we have about 8 minutes remaining in the show here. Well, now 7 minutes, it says. Just clicked down on me there. And
okay.
That's a little bit. You were mentioning about the University of Minnesota and they're electing a new president. I understand Dr. Brunix is going to be out of there pretty soon.
Well, he's obviously, first of all, he's had some health problems, and so
yeah.
He's reaching a point in time, and then whatever the retirement age is. Yeah, they've selected a search committee, and in fact, I had made inquiry in certain areas. I looked at the list yesterday that was published, released by the University of Minnesota's news source, public relations office, and I was trying to ascertain if any African-Americans had been appointed to the committee. I saw one, what appeared to be Hispanic, though it may have been an Hispanic by marriage because the name was a hyphen, but the last name was Gonzalez. But I didn't see any names that, and with the names were the disciplines that these individuals were involved in. A extreme number of individuals who are connected with the University of Minnesota itself, professors and et cetera. But I was wondering if anyone knew if any African Americans had been included on the search committee, and maybe we'll know that for our program next week.
Yeah, we have another caller. Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air with On Point. Hello. Okay, and up there. All right, let's try that. We've got another caller. Hello, you're live. You're live on air. Go ahead, ma'am. Okay, she's going to be quiet then. Okay, yeah, you can call in.
Yeah, we seem to be losing. You don't think folks are calling to verify and check out the fact that there is a number that will access us because this is absolutely high-powered and online, and our sponsors in Canada would not want us to do anything but do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think that might be a little bit because I've filtered a few calls where I get them on and they hang up for some strange reason, but that's okay because we're going to be on next week at the same time. On Blog Talk Radio, the easiest way to access this program is to go to www.theguruanddon. That's theguruandon.com. And that will take you right to our screen where you can listen to our past shows. And it also lets you schedule an alert. And what that means is that you can put your email address in there, your cell phone number, and it will dial you about 5, 6, 7 minutes before the show so you can be aware the show's going on. Okay, we have another caller. Yes, you're live on air. Go ahead. Hello. Yeah, I'm gonna write that number down. That same number calling back. So.
I see. Okay. By the way, they should be aware that we have the technology to intercept and read numbers, including block numbers. But go ahead.
Yeah. We get caller ID here, and they won't accept any block numbers here. So it's we have 4 more minutes left in the show. So we've had some stabbings and some murders last night in Minneapolis, and just a rash of different things going on that are not conducive to a healthy lifestyle here in
let me just cut in for a minute because okay. the information the day before the Matthew Johnson homicide on Thomas, the law enforcement groups, special task forces, utilized Willard School. There was a meeting of law enforcement agencies at Willard, talking in terms of the plan that the mayor announced after the meeting up at Hawthorne. Now, in the last 10 days, there have been significant stops and searches and roundups of African-Americans and others of color. What is interesting, and I want to close our program with saying this, one of the things that I find extremely disturbing is that with all these spot shotters and et cetera that we have, do you realize that we have yet, in 15 years, I have yet to see, with as many police as I see riding around the city, and particularly North Minneapolis, we have yet to have a situation where the police have rolled up on a situation in which shots have been fired and a person has just been injured or killed. Don't you find that interesting?
I find that real interesting. I had a chance to look at that shot map where they can tell in the matter of an instant where the shot was fired.
Right.
And those are also courtesy of earmarks through Congressman Keith Ellison's office, if those of you that didn't know that, to get those things put up, as well as the transit hub down there in front of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
But it's strange because, you know, no suspects in killings of
the last eight.
And still, you know, you're wondering what's really happening here. Is it really that important? Are they sitting back and say, let's watch them kill each other? Or is no?
Well,
one
I think I think the aunt who you talked about that is now on YouTube, that video that you took of her in the last minute and a quarter we have, her statements, though they were profaned, laced, and et cetera, but the fact of the matter is the emotion was strong. She had seen a loved one die. And by the way, one of the things that I think that you heard when you were on site was that the police didn't do a lot prior to the ambulance arriving to administrate any kind of aid to the deceased, if you will. Now, you got to understand, he was shot 3 times in the head, okay?
Yeah.
By the way, that is a new tactic for a community in this city to understand. Because of the concern now about the large number of people who are gathering, predominantly African-Americans, the decision has been made that in basically every homicide, rush in, pretend that the individual still has life signs, and transport them to the hospital in which you can provide better security to hold community at bay. Keep your eye on that one. That's what happened in the case of Jack.
Yeah. We have another caller here again. Hello, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello.
Maybe we have some technical difficulties at this end because that's the seventh call that didn't get in. But anyways, looks like we're about to down to a wrap, aren't we, Don?
Yes, we're down to a wrap. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point with me, Don Allen, and Ronald A. Arroots. Again, we'll be on next week, next Saturday at 5 p.m. And don't forget to read The Minneapolis Story. It's at www.theminneapolisstory.com. And Mr. Ron Edwards also has a weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, which is the oldest black newspaper in the Twin Cities or in Minnesota, and the oldest black business in Minnesota. And also, you can also view the Independent Business News Network at www.ibnn.com. IBNNnews.com. I changed the URL on that. Now, we have about 37 seconds left here on the show, and we're winding down. We'd like to thank all our listeners and our callers and the ones we didn't get to, because we might have been having a little technical difficulty on this end, which we will clear up by next week. But we sure hope you call back and we listen and tell your friends, your neighbors, and your coworkers to tune in to On Point.
Thank you. I'll call you back on your cell.
Okay. It's the same number. It's the 952-3598.
And a couple of brand new straws. That's how we keep you young and fair in the merry old land of Oz. Rub, rub, jar, rub, rub, jar, whether you're tin or bronze. That's how we keep you in repair in the merry old land of Oz.
We can make a dimple smile out of a frown. Can you even dye my eyes to match my gown?
Uh-huh.
Jolly old town.
Clip, clip, skill, clip, clip, down. We give the roughest claw.
That Satan heir of several fair in the merry old land of Oz.
That's how we have the day away in the merry old land of Oz. That's how we have the day away in
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. I'm going to call him. Okay, I'll do that, bud.